Welcome to the Insomnia Stream. This is the Black Wall Street edition. I'm your host, of course, Devin Stack. Hope you're having a good week. It's only Wednesday. Still got a little bit of week left to go, right? Middle of the week break. Hang out, chill out. Examine the past accomplishments of our friendly Negro neighbors, such as Black Wall Street, America's little mini Wakanda. I don't know how many times I've heard people pull that out. Oh yeah. Blacks used to be successful. And then white people got mad and destroyed it all. They were jealous of the black people and they burned it all to the ground. And at first you're like, well, I mean, let's just think about this for a second. Even if that's true, right? You know, we dropped atomic bombs on Japan. Okay? And they seem to have recovered. Like, pretty okay. What's going on? What's going on with your... Why haven't you rebuilt this Wall Street? Right? Like, you had this amazing Wall Street in Oklahoma, somehow. And it got burned down 100 years ago and you've just never recovered? Also, blacks weren't all concentrated in Oklahoma. Why was there only one? Why is there just this one? See, but then you're already thinking too much. You're already thinking too much. And you've already violated several of the laws of the boomer mindset, the post civil rights movement mindset, that no, Devin, blacks are just as capable as whites, and any time that they haven't succeeded, it's because of whites. So don't question it. Just know that's the truth. And in fact, we'll make lots of television performances for you to watch. If you don't believe us for some reason, if you think that we're lying to you somehow, we'll make lots of TV shows in the form of documentaries that reinforce this belief, for example.
It's the Roaring Twenties. The country is flourishing. Some African-American communities are prospering, like the residents of Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. A remarkable Baptist pastor named Solomon Sir Jones is the pioneering filmmaker. His footage was lost for more than 50 years. Jones captures the bustling life of Greenwood, which could be any American small town. But Tulsa's whites don't like what they see.
Uh-oh. You hear that, guys? The last thing white people want to see from blacks is for them to be living peacefully in a downtown area with businesses and not committing crimes. They hate that. Whites hate it when black people stop living in the ghettos and living like animals, running around bloodthirsty murderers. They hate it. They hate it. If there's anything that you've ever learned about white people, it's they hate it when black people act civilized. They hate it. And again, even when you look at this footage, it's like, so there's a street with a couple black businesses on it, I guess. I mean, okay. I mean, good. I mean, that's good, right, I guess. But at the same time, as a white man, I can see why the local white residents would instantly fly into a rage and want to burn it all down. Right? That makes total sense. That's why they depicted it this way in the movie The Watchmen. Watching a non-existent movie in a black theater, all dressed up in the black part of town. All the white people in this fake movie that doesn't exist are like, oh, thank God the black sheriff's in town. Good thing the black marshal's here to save us from the white man. See, the evil white man, good thing he's got him all strung up there. Sure, no imagery there. But anyway, let's continue.
There'll be no more justice today. Trust in the law.
That's right. Little black kid's like, trust in the law. The credo of all blacks, circa 1920. Trust in the law. That's what us Negroes always say. You white people always quick to lynch people. And not us blacks. Oh, no. No, we're more civilized than that. We don't fly into a rage when we see people acting civilized. We have respect for the law. What's that alarm I hear? Mom seems scared. Oh no, Whitey! It's Whitey!
Hey, God damn it, OB! gonna be okay, baby, right? You're gonna go with Heck and Liddy, and they're gonna get you someplace safe.
Safe from all the white people.
We're gonna be right behind you.
Quick, hurry. Look at that. Is that like a machine gun? Oh, look at that. Yeehaw! We're killing ourselves some niggers. Flying over the... You gotta love the bombers. The KKK brought in fucking airplanes. Anyway... and unfortunately, because blacks are like retards most of the time, they have a hard time differentiating between fiction and fact. And just like many black audiences legitimately started believing in Wakanda, this is how a lot of black audiences think that the Tulsa race riots, which have been renamed now, they've been rebranded, happened in 1921. So anyway... As I said, they've been rebranded. They made a centennial commission in 2021, a few years back, and renamed it as one of their big things they accomplished as this commission. They renamed it to the Tulsa Race Massacre. That's right, the Tulsa Race Massacre. And they started performing plays. And, doing basically these passion plays and really, really trying to turn this into, I guess, kind of the Black Holocaust is what you would liken it to. I mean, with the kind of coverage that they're giving it.
Local actors, directors, and playwrights are coming together performing a play about the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. Reflections opened last Friday and runs through this weekend at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Box 23's Tanya Motorzitsky is live in the Greenwood District. Tanya, you saw the play on opening night and brought along some special guests. How did it go?
Shay, well, it went really good. I didn't expect to...
Yeah, Tanya Motorzitsky. Tell us more about this play, this awesome play that you went to that was telling you about the Tulsa Race Massacre.
To cry with me, I brought two descendants, a Greenwood business owner and also a Greenwood leader. Now, for me, it was very surreal. There was moments I cried just trying to keep back tears because I just could not believe how people were treated back then. And just to know that that actually took place 102 years ago, it was a very hard thing to kind of, how do I put it, to grasp, so to speak.
That's how it happened. The way it was depicted in The Watchmen and the movies and this play, I'm sure. Yeah, that's how it was. Remember, Whitey, this is you did this. You did this. Watch the Passion play. You did this. You know, they did a movie about it, put it in theaters.
This day, they gonna know. They take one of us. They will have to take us off.
The story of the Tulsa Race Massacre is now being told on the big screen. The movie Black Wall Street Burning deals with the racial tensions of 1921 and how a minor incident caused those tensions to explode, resulting in hundreds of black lives and buildings lost. The movie is showing right now at the Cinema Circle Theater. One woman who saw the movie tells us that it raised a few questions for her.
Is there remorse, and will they ever receive reparations for that? It would be like saying, I'm sorry.
Oh. Again, let's take this at face value. Let's just say, for example, blacks did have this magical Wall Street, and white people got really mad and jealous, and they, one day, for no reason at all, started flying biplanes over it, dropping bombs, killing people, bayoneting pregnant women in the streets and burning down the entire city for no reason. You know, it's a little rich. It's a little rich that, let's say that happened one time, that after all of the rioting and all the murdering coming from blacks, directed at whites, a thousand times over this one incident, that you would be looking for reparations. Because it seems to me that if this is a credit system, you're massively in debt. You're massively in debt. In fact, I kind of feel like we could go around burning down more Black Wall Streets, at least three or four of them, more like 20 or 30 of them, and it'd still be fine. You'd still owe us. But again, this comes down to Gibbs. And they really wanted, I think they saw how successful the Jews were with their Holocaust narrative and the reparations that the Jews have managed to claw away from the hands of white people. And they're thinking to themselves, let's get this myth going.
New at 5, the oldest living survivor of the Tulsa race massacre.
Oh, there's even a survivor, which is weird because, like I said, this is over 100 years ago now. But I think when this aired, it was about 100 years ago. How is there a survivor? Just like they have Holocaust survivors, they've got the Tulsa race massacre. They got to shorten that up. If they want to parlay this into the thing that the Jews got going, they got to find like a fancy name. And you just make it up. Say it's like an African word, like Kwanzaa. Just make it up. Just be like, it was the Quatapa. When the Quatapa happened in 1921, the Quatapa. And then you'll get people to say it. You'll get stupid white people going around going, never forget the Quatapa. The Quatapa. The dark time in our nation's past, the Quatapa. Just do that. Maybe I shouldn't be giving you ideas. But anyway, let's say the Quatapa. Let's see the Quatapa survivor.
Her released her memoir today. Fox 23's Tanya Mordzitski is live after attending the book launch at Fulton Street Books, Tulsa's only Black-owned bookstore. Tanya.
Shay and Sarah at 109 years.
It's the only Black-owned bookstore. Am I the only one that finds humor in that? I don't know.
His old mother, Viola Ford Fletcher, is still crossing things off her bucket list. Now she can cross off being an author. Organizers of the event say she's the oldest, most seasoned author across the country. So at 109 years old. Wow.
She's 109. 109. So that would make her what exactly? Depending on when this aired, she's under 10 years old when this is going on. And it happened a century ago. I don't think your memory is going to be that great. I mean, I have trouble remembering things that happened, 20 years ago, let alone 100 years ago. And you were a kid. So you're conception of what was even going on, you didn't know what was going on. I mean, even if you were there, right? Like, even if you were like the little kid in the Watchmen movie, you didn't know what the fuck was going on. You saw a bunch of things happening. It was scary, but you didn't know what the fuck was going on. Anyway.
Amazing. Now, she says that she's hoping that this can continue bringing upon justice. Even at 109 years old, one of the three last living survivors, mother Viola Ford Fletcher, is staying busy.
One of the keys to longevity of life is to keep people motivated and put something on their calendar. Mm-hmm. If you always have something to look forward to, then you can't lay down on the job.
Wednesday, May 31st, marks 102 years since the 1921 Tulsa race massacre.
Yeah, she barely looks sentient at this point, 109, whatever. I doubt she wrote the memoir, but anyway. So, they got a big memorial built. Don't even want to know how much that cost. The big Black Wall Street memorial, so that it was real. Yeah, right. By the way, this is right around the same time black people were tearing down statues of white people. What kind of monuments are going to exist in America in like 20 years? See, when I was a kid and we would drive around the country on these borderline abusive road trips in a station wagon with my parents with no air conditioning, you know, we'd stop at all the different historical sites, much to my chagrin. I just wanted to fucking get to where we were going. My mom always wanted to go look at stupid shit. And there were these plaques, you know, ran in the middle of not fucking nowhere. Here's where this pioneer did this thing or whatever. What kind of monuments are going to exist in this country in 20 or 30 years? It's not going to be, they're not going to be very historically accurate, I would imagine, if this is any indication. I guarantee you there's going to be George Floyd monuments. I mean, there already kind of is, but yeah, give it time. Give it another 20, 30 years, and there'll be bronze statues. And that'll be the retelling of that story won't resemble anything like we experienced, but it won't matter because we'll be old. So they have this this little monument here, and they like to you know show the photos. That went a little too far there. That photo is relevant in a different way. All these photos here, like, oh, look, it's burning down. There's Black Wall Street. That's actually not the the buildings in the foreground are not the buildings on fire. No, there's the remnants of Black Wall Street, which was, there you go. Basically two city blocks. It was just two blocks surrounded by shanties. But be that as it may, you might ask yourself, because their big thing is, like in that opening clip I played, they say, oh, you know, they were very successful. They came to Tulsa for the same reason why white people came to Tulsa. There was an oil boom that happened a few years prior, I think around 1905 or so. Became a boom town. Tulsa went from, you know, really tiny to relatively decent size, well, for Oklahoma City, in a relatively short period of time, and the great Negro migration was taking place, and you had the Roaring Twenties going on, right? You had the economy was going up, and so black people went to cities to get some of that money, and that's exactly what was going on. Is you had a bunch of black people move to where white people were already making tons of money from the oil business and some other businesses in the area, and they were trying to get a little piece of that pie, like they were in American cities all across the country. And then of course, according to the way they tell the story, white people somehow, even though they were already there, already established, already successful, already had way nicer neighborhoods and assets than the black people that lived in the area, for some reason, white people flew into a rage because of, I guess, jealousy, and just burned it all down one day for no reason. Well, it doesn't really make any sense. And of course, obviously it doesn't make any sense at all if you're white and reasonable. And so it requires a little bit of inquiry. And so what I did is I went back and looked at some of the original reporting on what exactly took place, what exactly happened, and how it all got started to see if maybe, you know, I don't know. I mean, they got to be right about at least one of these. Right? Over and over and over again, they're always telling these stories, you know, Trayvon Martin and George Floyd, and, you know, they always end up being bullshit. Every single time, they end up being bullshit. But one of these days, because we're not perfect, I mean, white people aren't perfect, one of these days, they got to get it right. one of these days we had to have actually done the thing they think that we did, right? Once, just once. So I look back, and this is some of the initial reporting of what happened.
A check of incoming trains has been completed. Here and there are no Negroes on any of them.
This is right after the incident. This is right after the massacre. And the article opens by talking about how they are worried about black people coming on trains to... Which is weird if it's just white people going around burning the city down, right? If that's what happened, if in the immediate aftermath of white people chimping out and burning down black people's Wall Street for no reason, the authorities, and by the way, the federal authorities, because the feds were sent in because it got out of hand. And so it's a little weird that they're preventing more black people from coming into town. But that's what they're talking on the trains. They're saying, hey, you know, we're checking the trains and not allowing new black people coming from out of town who heard about the big fun riot. I mean, the scary white people, they, you know, stopping anyone new from coming into town.
According to a report from Muskogee at 12:30 a.m., it was said that three Negroes who arrived on one train were taken to jail and are to be held there until the trouble subsides and order is restored. The jail was filled to capacity at 12 o'clock last night, and there were still more Negroes coming in. They were arrested in all sections of the city by National Guardsmen, deputy sheriffs, and policemen after Negroes were ordered by the authorities to remain inside their homes. The guardsmen were instructed to tell the Negroes to stay in their homes and not to leave them until the trouble was over. Officers were instructed to pick up every Negro found on the streets and to take them to the city jail. The first shooting occurred at the courthouse, according to a report received here. Three white men were shot, and one Negro was killed in the shooting. A Negro was shot and killed by a white man in front of the Palace Theatre on Main Street at 10 o'clock last night. The Negro was said to have fired on the white man first.
Well, and by the way, that's going to be a reoccurring theme. You know, spoiler alert. In the altercations that took place between the whites and the blacks, which we'll get to the why here in a moment, in every case, it was blacks escalating. It was blacks escalating and black provocateurs trying to get a chimp out going. Imagine that, blacks trying to start a riot. That's a little bit weird. But yeah, I'm surprised people aren't, along with this massacre, they should be freaking out that the whites were starting to put the blacks in prison just for showing up until things had calmed down. Don't you wish we'd been able to do that in the summer of love, where all the Black Lives Matter riots were taking place? You know, it's funny. This is supposed to be this crazy massacre where hundreds of people died. And they had it all buttoned up by the next day. Huge massacre. They're burning down half the town. Hundreds of people killed. Buttoned up the next day just by putting all the black people in jail. It just stopped. Isn't that weird? You know, they put the black people in jail and it all stops. Which doesn't make any sense, like if it was, you know, anyway. Let's continue.
The Negro section of the city was under control of the National Guardsmen at 1 o'clock this morning. Sheriff McCullough and his deputies were working on the problem of how the trouble started. They reported that a Negro had been arrested for an alleged attack on a white girl.
Oh! Well, hold on. Well, that seems like a missing piece to the puzzle. We'll get more into that in a second.
According to the sheriff, a mob of white men went to the courthouse to take the Negro from the jail. The Negroes then armed themselves and went to the courthouse to protect the Negro prisoner. The trouble started there and spread to other sections of the city. The guardsmen were called out at 10 o'clock last night and were on duty in the Negro section of the city at 1 o'clock this morning. The guardsmen were instructed to arrest every Negro found on the streets and to take them to the city jail. The city was quiet at 1 o'clock this morning, but the guardsmen were still on duty.
So they shut it down by 1, by 1 a.m. It was already shut down. So that's weird. That's weird that missing that piece, that important piece of information. So what happened, apparently, we'll get more into this, is a white woman was assaulted by a black man and brought into jail. And the white men of the community were pissed off and went down to the, you got two sides of the story. One side, the way it was reported initially, is that they went down there to lynch him. And the police prevented the lynching. And then a bunch of black people showed up with guns and to protect the black guy who assaulted a white woman. And then all hell broke loose. This is one of the articles that talked about the assault.
A Negro delivery boy who gave his name to the police as Diamond Dick, but who has been identified as Dick Rowland.
Diamond Dick. Yeah.
My dick.
So he was arrested and he said his name was Diamond Dick. But anyway.
But who has been identified as Dick Rowland, was arrested on South Greenwood Avenue this morning by officers Carmichael and Pack, charged with attempting to assault the 17-year-old white elevator girl in the Drexel building early yesterday. He will be tried in municipal court this afternoon on a state charge. The girl said she noticed the Negro a few minutes before the attempted assault looking up and down the hallway on the third floor of the Drexel building, as if to see if there was anyone in sight, but thought nothing of it at the time. A few minutes later, he entered the elevator, she claimed, and attacked her, scratching her hands and face and tearing her clothes. Her screams brought a clerk from Renberg's store to her assistance, and the Negro fled. He was captured and identified this morning, both by the girl and clerk, police say.
Okay, so word goes out that a white girl, 17-year-old white girl, working as an elevator operator, was attacked by a black man, Diamond Dick. And the white men of the town wanted to take care of business. And now you might think to yourself, that's pretty irrational. I mean, you were just making fun of black people for not respecting the law, and now it sounds like white people don't respect the law. They don't respect the rule of law in this instance. You know, this whole lynching stuff, like that's just that's mob rule. We're civilized. We don't believe in that. We'll get to that in a second. And this is it was further reported in this article telling a similar story.
The race rioting that broke out here late Tuesday night grew out of the arrest Tuesday afternoon of Dick Rowland, a Negro bootblack, on a charge of assaulting a white elevator girl in the Drexel building on Monday. There was a movement afoot, it was reported, to go to the county courthouse Tuesday night and lynch the bootblack. This report spread over the Negro section, and early in the evening crowds of Negroes began forming. Rowland was taken from the city to the county jail Tuesday afternoon and his preliminary trial set for June the 7th in municipal court. Rowland was arrested on South Greenwood Ave Marche early Tuesday morning by officers Henry Carmichael and H.C. Pach. He was identified by the girl after his capture. The boy did not deny the attack. The girl alleged that the Negro entered the elevator without any provocation, attacked her. She screamed for help, and a clerk in the Renberg store ran to her assistance. Upon his approach, the Negro fled and had been in hiding until captured by the police officers yesterday morning. The girl's an orphan and is attending a local business college and running an elevator on off hours.
Whatever happened to believe all women, anyway? Yeah, white women, just so you know, you're going to lose that battle. You're gonna lose the if it's between black people and you, you know, you're always gonna lose that. You're always gonna lose that. So once again, we have several witnesses that this black man assaulted a white woman. She screamed. He ran away. Some of the details are, I guess. I don't want to say exaggerated in some of the reporting, but maybe sensationalized, because it doesn't sound like, you know, it was much of an assault. After looking at all of the different versions of the reporting, it seems like he did attempt to assault her. He grabbed her. She screamed. And because the clerk that was or clerk was nearby and came out real quick, he ran away. And you might think to yourself, well, that's. If that's the whole thing, I mean, that's crazy that white people would flip out and want to lynch him. Well, there's context. There's context to this story that you might be missing. Context that a lot of people are missing because of the propaganda that was immediately spun into action as far back as over 100 years ago when this incident happened. In fact, you can go back and look at the judge's instructions to the grand jury as he mentions that there are people trying to stir up the black people and get them to riot and spreading black propaganda.
Another matter to which I desire to call your attention is the activities of certain persons in connection with the dissemination of radical and seditious doctrines among the colored people. It has come to my attention that certain persons have gone among the Negroes and by means of inflammatory speeches, pamphlets, and other printed matter, have attempted to incite the colored people to acts of violence and lawlessness. Such conduct is a menace to the peace and safety of the community and should not be tolerated. You should investigate the matter fully and indict any person who is guilty of this offense. The law of this state makes it a felony for any person to advocate or encourage criminal syndicalism, sabotage, or violence as a means of accomplishing political or industrial reform. You should also investigate any organized effort to arm the colored people or to encourage them to resist the law or the constituted authorities. Such efforts, if they exist, are a direct incitement to riot and insurrection and should be promptly and severely dealt with.
And again, this is interesting language for a incident that apparently was a bunch of white people chimping out and burning down the city. A lot of the focus seems to be on containing the black violence. It's a little weird. It's a little weird way of looking at it. The facts of the matter were just white people freaked out and burned down, a city. It doesn't make any sense. Unless that's not what happened. Anyway, an example of some of this propaganda can be found in the black newspaper. Blacks and with their Black Wall Street, they did have a black newspaper. You can tell that it's written by a black. Here's a part of the article from the black newspaper. Whole truth not told, but little of the real truth has reached the outside world concerning the whole horrible affair. The attempted rape incident has turned out to be nothing more than a discovery of the fact that a giddy white girl had become infatuated with a comely young Negro lad of scarcely more than 20 years of age. He was arrested at the instance of a group of white men, and the charge of attempted rape was lodged against him. The boy is yet in jail, but the girl has disappeared, and the rape charge is about to fall to the ground. And this is, we hear this all the time, right? It really wasn't rape. Again, believe all women unless a black man's involved and the woman's white. Then all of a sudden it's a white woman who is craving the LD. Right? She wanted that BBC and then in an elevator, I guess, and then just started screaming for no reason at her job until people came. I don't know. Did he reject her advances? Is the story that, hey, baby, why don't I take this up to the top floor and then you can have your way with me in the elevator and then no one will ever. And then he's like, no, miss, I can't. No, I ain't no way I can. And then she starts screaming because she feels rejected. I mean, what is that the story? Is that the story? And yes, she went into hiding, obviously, because of this incident. She went into hiding and didn't want to be found by the press or by black people who were basically in these same newspapers insinuating that maybe they ought to go find her. Maybe they ought to go find this white woman. Now, again, you might say to yourself, okay, well, be that as it may, she was attacked. The attack was thwarted. Once again, why would the whites in this area want to lynch her? And that does seem a little out of character for white people, right? That if let's just say that this Black Wall Street thing was going on great, going on gangbusters, right? Like it was just this nice part of town. It was the envy of the rest of the city, apparently. And then one little incident like this happens, and all the white people, like lots of them, show up at the police station demanding justice. And then, and again, if let's say everything was going great, right? And then the white people did do this, then all the black people show up with guns. Kind of sounds like everything wasn't going great. Because that's not how riots happen. Riots don't just happen overnight over nothing. Well, sometimes they happen over nothing if you're black. But white people don't just... We don't riot almost ever. And so there's usually like a reason if something like this happens. And one of these reasons might be, I took a look at the record. All I did was... is I looked for, and this is not even a thorough search. I spent maybe a couple hours, maybe, and that sounds like more than it actually is, because it's clunky the way you have to go through this stuff. And I searched for a couple of hours just for the 2 years prior to this event. Limited the search results just to Tulsa or the Tulsa area. For instances where black people were attacking white women. And lo and behold, it was happening all the fucking time. All the fucking time. And not only that, the cops weren't exactly solving the crimes to the satisfaction of the whites that lived there. Really, when you look at these articles, the picture that's painted isn't one of a successful black community, booming black community, and you know, alongside a white community that becomes enraged and full of jealousy and burns it down for no reason. Really, what you see is a bunch of black people moving to Tulsa, which is a boom town. There are some businesses, sure. And there is segregation to some extent, so those businesses cater mostly to just black people. And the interactions are not very frequent between the black businesses and white people, because it's like their own little part of town. In fact, they called it Little Africa. In the newspapers, they call it Little Africa. So it's the Little Africa doesn't sound like the place where like white people are jealous, right? Like, oh man, I wish we lived in Little Africa, said no white person ever. And you start to see stories of what was actually going on in Little Africa. And what was going on in Little Africa, you got to remember Prohibition. You find a lot of stories about bootlegging. There's this drink called Chog or Chonk or something like that. I think it gets mentioned in one of these articles. That's like this bootleg beer that black people were making. You see lots of stories of black people, black men, primarily black men assaulting white women. And not so much like, oh, he grabbed my arm in the elevator and I screamed and he ran away, but lots of successful assaults leading up to this. Again, this is just a handful of what I found in a couple of hours looking in just a two-year window prior to this bubbling over of white frustration, I guess you could say.
Police detectives today said they had been unsuccessful in search for an unidentified Negro who late yesterday afternoon attacked Ruth Arnold, 17, 1824, E. 8th Saint, when she went into a barn at the rear of her home. As the girl walked into the barn, the Negro, described as being about 21 years old, 5 feet 5 inches in height, weighing about 150 pounds, and wearing a brown hat, dark coat, and grey pants, grabbed her around the neck and was choking her when her screams attracted the attention of neighbours. The girl's throat today bore black and blue imprints of the Negro's fingers. When the girl screamed, householders residing in that vicinity say the Negro dashed out of the barn and ran towards the city.
Oh, and another theme that you see in these stories is the police are either slow to try to apprehend these assailants or unsuccessful. There's a train that goes through town. A lot of these guys will commit crimes, then hop on the train, they're gone. And there's this white solidarity that is being forged out of this imminent danger that they're all in as a consequence of the proximity to all these black people that live in the black district. And over and over and over, you see these stories. You know, here's another story. White girl attacked. Identifies victim as her assailant. Crowd holds off all officers. Now, the victim is what they're talking about. This was a black guy that attacked a white woman, and they lynched her, or lynched him. They lynched him because the cops were just not getting justice for these people. And it was happening over and over and over again. And here's another story.
The attack upon the young woman took place while she was on the way to Mulberry from her home near that place. She was found tied to two trees by a small boy playing in that vicinity. Her throat was slashed. According to physicians, she probably will recover. Immediately after she was found, a posse started in pursuit of her assailant.
So this is a common theme over and over and over again. White women, home alone or whatever. These are tight communities. This is someone's mom. This is someone's wife, daughter, sister, aunt. And you have these black people coming through in these outskirts of town and attacking these white women when they're alone. And the cops aren't finding them. And so they're forming posses and looking for these people. Here's another story where the police aren't able to find the assailant.
After following the trail for more than 2 miles, the bloodhounds, which were brought to Ocmulgee late Wednesday afternoon by the Bay's Detective Agency of Tulsa, to track down the Negro who attacked Mrs. Tucker Morton.
All right, this is a whole nother case. This is each one of these is a different case. So this is yet another white woman attacked by a black man.
Tuesday night lost the scent and the chase was abandoned. Mrs. Morton, who lives about a mile and a half south of Ocmulgee, had been in town Tuesday doing some shopping and returned home about 6 o'clock in the evening. When she reached the Skelton Glass plant, she was accosted by a Negro and asked for a ride. She told the Negro that she was going but a short distance and did not let him ride. The Morton home is about a half mile south of the glass factory and about 300 yards off the main travelled road. When she had driven about 300 yards down the lane which leads to her home, she was grabbed from behind by the Negro, who pulled himself into the buggy. In the struggle that ensued, both fell to the ground. The fall broke the Negro's hold, and Mrs. Morton screamed. Her husband answered. Immediately special deputies were sent to the scene of the attack, and the bloodhounds were brought from Tulsa. The hounds took up the scent and trailed the Negro over a circuitous route for about 2 miles, losing the scent near the glass factory. Sheriff Henry Tucker stated last night that he had a good description of the Negro, and that he and his force would comb the county for him.
Yeah, but again, this is happening over and over and over again, and people don't realize that this is at a time, this is 100 years ago, you don't have any technology. Like, their high-tech way of solving the crime is bringing fucking bloodhounds there. They're bringing dogs to sniff the ground where the murderous Negro attacked your wife, and then, following a trail for a couple miles and then losing the trail, and the guy's just gone. And this is happening over and over and over again. The cops aren't able to find them. They're taking too long. They're also kind of spread thin because of the crime. And they have this, again, this is at a time when you don't really have automobiles they exist sort of, but it's not like you have paved roads and cop cars or even radios. You know what I mean? Like it's like the Wild West. It's like the Wild West. And so you're kind of cut off. And like the Wild West, sometimes justice had to be at the hands of a mob, or it wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen. Look at all. When you watch an old Western film, you see the same kind of a thing, right? Where the sheriff's like, "Oh, I'm gonna deputize like five random dudes in the town, and we're all gonna get on our horses and go try to hunt this criminal that has ridden off into the mountains." Like, because that's just what you had. If you didn't do that, it wouldn't get done. It wouldn't get done. And the way that they frame this lynching stuff that white people were doing, as if it was just like out of control mobs, when all these other mechanisms existed to achieve justice. And they were just too crazed and rabid to wait for the wheels of justice, which grind slowly but surely. No, it was a situation where, hey, my sister just got raped and tied to a tree over there, and her neighbor's son found her like this, and the clock is ticking. Go round up the boys and bring your fucking guns, and we're going to find this fucking darky and take care of business. Or else next week, it's going to be your sister, or your wife, or your daughter. And that's just the way that it was. That is the way that humans with a healthy survival instinct behave. And it's funny because a lot of people, this will sound maybe kind of radical too, but then they'll be the same people that will make fun of Austin Metcalf's dad for sounding like a big fucking cuck and slobbering all over black people and trying to make this is not about race. And they'll say, "Oh, look at this fucking pussy." Yeah, this is the solution to that. You're right. He is a big fucking pussy. But the reason why this sort of stuff goes on, the reason why black people walk all over you now, is because you got guilted out of having that survival instinct. This is why I'm a little bit encouraged, too, because this is how white people behaved not 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago. 100 years ago, white people were like, you know what, fuck this guy. We're going to take care of business. I don't think people fully understand how radically the social fabric of our country was distorted and mutilated post-World War II. Because that's what it was. People forget that even in World War II, the military had segregated barracks. It wasn't until after World War II that this narrative that, oh no, no races are different, we're all the same, you don't want to be like this comic book villain Hitler, who was obsessed with white people and blonde hair and blue eyes, and he was stupid because he didn't even have blonde hair and blue eyes, and so he didn't even live up to his own standard, which obviously should have sent, like, okay, well, he's not an idiot, so obviously he wasn't saying that, right? But it should be a little bit encouraging to know that white people, not 1,000 years ago, but 100 years ago, had enough gumption, had enough self-respect, had enough survival instinct to say, these black people are just going around attacking our women, we gotta fucking do something about it. Here's another story. And look at the headline, just the headline itself. And if I'd had more time, I would have been able to track down. They mentioned 4 other assaults that I don't even have the articles on. But just the way that it's phrased. Another woman is assaulted by a Negro. Well, you only say that if it's happening all the time. And it was. People were getting fucking fed up with this shit. So the newspaper headline for that day, another woman. Yet another woman, white woman, is getting attacked by a Negro.
Negro carefully planned attack on white woman. Left evidence to show that he laid in wait for girl is attacked within 20 feet of residence. Police have good description of assailant. No arrests made up to 3 o'clock. Exactly 1 week after Kitty Hardgrave was attacked and criminally assaulted by a man near her home in the 500 block on 3rd Street, Helen Armour, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. William B. Armour, a pharmacist, was assaulted by a Negro within 20 feet of her home, 411 West Tacoma Street. Miss Armour immediately notified her mother, who telephoned for the police. A napkin and a lunchbox were found in some shrubbery near where the Negro had dragged Miss Armour after he had knocked her apparently insensible with a blow over the head with a piece of pipe or some other blunt instrument. She was able to give the police a minute description of her assailant and declared she could identify him. Miss Armour had gone from her home to visit a neighbour. As she was returning about 10 o'clock, the Negro, who apparently had been waiting for her at the entrance to an alley, jumped out, dealt her a blow over the head, and tore her cap over her face. He then carried her to a barn in the rear of her home. Miss Armour had made no outcry and seemed unconscious. When the Negro noted her apparent condition, he removed the cap from her face and she screamed. He then ran from the barn. Miss Armour immediately made her experience to her father. He telephoned the police and a search of the neighbourhood was put underway. It was learned that the cap and other articles were found near where she had been attacked. Half an hour later, a Negro was taken to the police station by Don Spears, Floyd Bird, and another Negro, wearing khaki trousers, jump out of a taxicab and run into a Mexican cafe. Spears and the other men gave chase, but the Negro got away and began to run toward the Santa Fe tracks. The Negro began to run, and in every detail, he fitted the description given by Miss Armour. The driver of the taxicab was later told the police that he knew the Negro whom he had been driving around, and that he would assist the police in every way to apprehend him. Chief Farr said this morning he was certain that the Negro who attacked Miss Armour is the one who last Friday night attacked Hardgrave. But no arrests have been made in either case as yet. News of last night's assault travelled rapidly, and the police station was thronged frequently during the night, with persons seeking to inquire what progress was being made in the search for the assailant, which police officers answered with vague replies. A score or more of citizens offered inducements to the police in an effort to have more adequate policing facilities. Miss Armour, victim of last night's assault, is employed as a stenographer at the Southwestern Title Company. Five women have been attacked on the streets at night during the past 3 weeks. No arrests have been made in any case.
Seems like an important missing context, doesn't it? You have a police department that is dropping the fucking ball. You have blacks assaulting white women left and right with increasing frequency. You have the white people showing up to the jail en masse to confront the cops about this when they don't have a black suspect in custody. This is the other thing people forget. 100 years ago, you didn't have the internet. You didn't even have the evening news. If something interesting happened in your town, or, you know, in the case of this, something criminal, your choice was read about it the next day, or maybe in the newspaper, or you could actually go down to the police station and talk to the fucking cops and be like, what the hell's going on here? What are you going to do to help all these white women? Why aren't you arresting these black people? What the hell's happening? So a group of white people showing up to the police station, a large group of the, like a mob sized group showing up at the police station after one of these incidents, even when they don't have a black person in custody, is not an unusual thing. In fact, it's a very usual thing. Especially as tensions were rising over this problem of black people attacking white people and then getting away with it. And you also have to wonder, why are they getting away with it? Is it real? Is it just that the police are that incompetent? Or is it perhaps the in-group preference of the black community that hides these people, that shelters these criminals? You know, like when Jews commit crimes and then flee to Israel, sort of a thing. Black men assault white victims and then flee to Little Africa. So we're sort of getting a totally different picture of what was going on in Tulsa. You had black criminality on the rise. You had white people feeling helpless. They're not being helped out by the cops. And yes, they're resorting to lynching, as they are all across the country in various areas that have similar conditions, where it's a more rural area, they don't have the ability to have cops everywhere, they're tired of, like, their family getting raped all the time, and they just say, you know what, fuck it, We're gonna send a message to future blacks who might want to rape my sister. Hey, fuck around, find out. And the cops are stretched too thin because of the crime. And when they do get these people in custody, they actually protect them. Here's yet another story.
While Sheriff Abner Bruce and all available deputies are looking for a Negro who yesterday held up and robbed and threatened to attack a Miss McGuire, farmer's daughter, living 5 miles south of Bristow, a posse, consisting of the entire McGuire family, joined in by angered farmers and citizens of Bristow, were searching for the same party, determined to stage a lynching if he is found. The McGuire girl was walking to her home from Bristow and was within sight of her house when a Negro suddenly stepped from the weeds and flashed a gun. She was compelled to give up all her valuables, including wearing apparel she had in a suitcase. The neighbor saves girl. The presence of a neighbor coming down the road probably saved the girl from an attack. The Negro, however, told her to walk on with her hands down until the neighbor passed. She refused to obey his orders and called for help. Then the Negro ran. Immediately following the incident, a large posse was formed and a hunt for the Negro began. He was dressed in blue overalls and a light shirt. Races with posse. Sheriff Bruce learned of the posse and its intention and immediately started a number of deputies to the scene. He says he wants to capture the Negro and remove him from the county before violence is done. The sheriff took bloodhounds to the trail late yesterday and was following up this work today. Fight is imminent. The two parties hunting down the black are not working together, but each is watching the activities of the other. The sheriff hopes to get possession of the Negro if he is caught, and the posse says it will take the Negro from the sheriff if he is caught. Early today, the Negro had not been located, but it was reported he was thought to be in hiding in the vicinity of the holdup.
So you're starting to have vigilante justice basically out of necessity. Yeah, this entire family band together. Isn't that like a breath of fresh air compared to all these white parents we see when their children are murdered, raped and murdered by these non-whites? You see them get up on the podium and cry about how this isn't about race and, don't let this divide us. And I like Mexican food, or I like watching, you know, football or whatever. You know, it's we can't let this divide us because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we all bleed red, and, you know,
I had a lot of black friends, by the way, and played football and everything.
You know, that's just it's like night and day. No, instead you had white people banding together and forming a posse and combing the area looking for the guy. And even saying that, you know what, even if the sheriff finds him first, we'll just go take him from the sheriff. What's he going to do? We'll just go get him. And that happened, by the way. I mean, not in this case that I could find, but like that, there were instances of the cops found him and the white people said, no, we're just going to take care of this. You know, famously in the case of the murdering child rapist that the ADL was founded to protect. And that's just what happens when white people have a pretty good sense of justice. And sometimes they realize that, you know, the government is unable to deliver it. Here's another story. I just found out, I wasn't even really looking Like, it was just so easy to find these stuff. Like, I would be looking for something else, and I'd find this, like, another story on the same page. This one was about some cops that do a bust on a black bootlegger, and the black bootlegger kills one of the cops and seriously injures another. Or no, kills two of the cops and seriously injures another. And then runs off. And in this case, the lynch mob went while the, you know, because the cops couldn't, you know, the cops tried to do the job, right? The cops tried to do the raid. Two of them got killed. One of them got seriously injured. The citizens band together, hunted down the black guy that did it, and hung him from a telephone pole. So when you hear this, oh yeah, the evil whites were just going around lynching blacks. No, they lynched a black who killed two cops and tried to kill three. That's who they were lynching. They were lynching rapists. That's who they were lynching. They were lynching the people that were escaping justice. Because they were used to living in a civilized society. And after being forced in proximity with uncivilized people, they had to adjust the way that society operated. Sometimes you have to be a little uncivilized yourself. Sometimes you have to say, if them's the rules. Or else you're the sucker. Or else you're like the parents of all these dead white kids. And it wasn't just the women. Here's another story. White guy minding his own business. In fact, initially friendly with his black assailant.
Frank McGowan, 45 years old, night watchman for the Nolan Paving Company, located north of town, is in hospital here in a dangerous condition as a result of murderous attack that an unknown Negro made upon him just before noon today. While McGowan was clearing away brush near his home about 11 o'clock when the Negro appeared, carrying a shotgun. He told McGowan that he had a squirrel treed and would like to borrow his dog. As the dog had disappeared during the night, McGowan accompanied the Negro into the timber, and when a distance from the road, the Negro suddenly covered McGowan with the shotgun. "You're under arrest," he said. When McGowan demanded to see his papers, the Negro snarled and commanded him to drop his axe, which he picked up and began to use on the white man. The first blow caught McGowan on the left cheek, almost severing the ear. A second blow lacerated his wrist, and another his forearm. McGowan managed to check the flow of blood from his wounds and start for the paving plant. He was brought in by employees of the paving company. Dr. R. M. Sweeney dressed his wounds. His condition is critical. Sheriff Abner Bruce, upon learning of the assault, formed a posse of deputies and businessmen and is searching for the Negro.
Always searching and never finding. So this guy is just minding his own business and a black guy attacks him with an axe. Literally for no reason at all. You want no reason at all? Oh, yeah, the white people for no reason at all just went and burned down the black part of town. Really? No reason at all, huh? No reason. They weren't pissed off by, I don't know, having all their mothers and aunts and sisters and daughters raped and attacked and getting attacked with axes and cops getting shot. Had nothing to do with any of that. Again, this is the 2 years. 2 years leading up to the riot. 2 years. I mean, this is already a lot of crime for Tulsa. What was the population of Tulsa in 2020 or 1920? Let's find out. Let's see here. Population of Tulsa in 1920, it wasn't even 100,000. It was approximately 70,000. And most of that was because of the oil boom. Then you had this kind of shit happening on a frequent basis. There's another story. And again, this is another story of a black that got away. This was cops chased a black guy. He gets away, and they think he got on a train to go to Oklahoma City. So this is just over and over and over again. These black people keep getting away. Here's another story. Negro hold up, stabs white who resisted. This is talking about a black guy who stabbed a white. And again, two years. Last line there, the Negro has not been arrested. So if you want to know why the lynchings happened, this is why they happened. Another story, two Negroes arrested for stealing a horse. Because I guess, you know, people didn't have, there weren't as many bikes back then or cars. But Negroes like to steal transportation. This just happened. This was just next to this article. And I was like, oh, so there we go. It's a just part and parcel, right, of living next to Black Wall Street. And that's just part of the Black Wall Street experience. There's another story about a black, again, it's 2 years, totally different story. Black guy shoots a cop and then runs and hides inside of a grave. You know, it's just over and over and over again. This one I thought was funny because this happened in Black Wall Street. This was a, you know, this high trust versus low trust society example where a black guy in Black Wall Street scams two other black guys by convincing them to give them money in order to get the money that a white man dropped. Now, again, I thought this was Black Wall Street where they were like all, you know, it's just like small town America. But this scam only works if they're retarded and they want to rip off a white guy.
Negroes fell for old game. Two blacks lose $450 and $150, respectively, by trying to get a fortune quick. Using a variation of the old lost pocketbook trick, an unknown Negro, who used the name of Joe Hardy, a well-known Tulsa Negro, to further his scheme, Wednesday successfully deprived Eugene Kirsch and his friend Negroes of $600 and then left the city unapprehended. Kirsch lost his savings of $450 over to the strange Negro. The victim related his experience to a deputy sheriff Thursday afternoon. Wednesday at noon, Kirsch and his friend were walking south on Main Street, and after passing Second Street, saw a Negro stoop and pick up a pocketbook. Both men say they believe the wallet dropped from the pocket of a white man who a few minutes before had been cranking an automobile. The strange Negro, noticing that Kirsch and his friend saw the transaction, asked both men to go with him around the corner where a split of the contents would be made on condition that nothing would be said about the matter. Kirsch, his friend and the strange Negro, on looking in the pocketbook, saw what the former thought was several bills of large denomination. The stranger then asked the men to go to the palace building, where he said he was employed. It is believed the strange Negro used Hardy's name to allay any subsequent suspicion the victims might have. Hardy has been employed at the building for some months and is favourably known. Returning from the building, the Negro told his boss had advised him not to attempt to pass the bills as the bank might be suspicious. But they were assured there was a small fortune in money awaiting them after the bills could be safely changed. Early in the afternoon, the stranger again met the men and told them he lacked a few $100, having the proper amount of money to divide the bills, and that if they could furnish the money, he would meet them at the post office at 5 o'clock, and the division made. Kirsch drew his savings, $450, from a bank, and the friend gave up $150. This they turned over to the Negro, who promised to return in an hour, but he didn't. So Kirsch and his friend are still waiting for their part of the fortune.
Womp womp. That's what was happening on Black Wall Street. The strange Negro. The strange Negro in Black Wall Street. Anyway. The grand jury we spoke about earlier that was convened to figure out what exactly happened. Because as I said, it was common practice for white people to show up at the police station after an event, especially if it was publicized in the newspaper, as this one was. Usually if it was an actual lynch mob and they were going to do some lynching, they would wear masks and they would try to obscure their identity, because they're, especially if you're there to take prisoners away from law enforcement, if law enforcement knows who you are, that's, you know. No one wore masks. What happened was the group of white people showed up. They were really pissed off. Three of them walked up there. Again, this is the environment that you're in. Three representatives of the group walked up to talk to the police, and the police said, "We're not gonna, you know, we're gonna do this the right way," or whatever. And the three men went back to the group of white people to tell them. Meanwhile, Black showed up with a bunch of guns and started talking shit and circling the crowd in cars with guns. And then they shot a white guy. And the white people ran off and got their guns and started shooting the Black people. And because, like I've always said, if there was ever a race war, we would win. Whites won. Black people tried to start a race war to protect a attempted rapist that was in custody, and they found out. The whites returned fire. Speaking of fire, some fires were started, and this magical Black Wall Street, which was literally just, it was like two blocks of black businesses. It wasn't, you know, it was no Wall Street. Okay. it wasn't even a main street. It was two blocks of shitty black businesses. And then a bunch of shanties, which is why they went up like a tinderbox. That's why it burned down so fast. And yeah, a lot of casualties on both sides, but way more on the black side. The estimates are all over the fucking place. The high estimate that you always hear, the black people are always, they say hundreds of, you know, it's like 400. Yeah, it wasn't 400. But it might have been around 100. Might have been around 100 black guys. But I think on the white side, it was around 50. So it wasn't, it was a crazy battle. In fact, the blacks had a machine gun. They had a like a pillbox set up. And I tried to find that. Apparently there's footage of this, at least in one of the newspapers. They reported that there was a film that had been taken and it was going to be shown to the public. And I couldn't find this film anywhere. But there was film taken of whites charging a black machine gun nest, or I don't know what you'd call it, and you know, stopping the blacks from machine gunning everybody. In fact, that's the weird thing, is there's not a lot of footage available, at least, of this incident. There is there's footage of what happened, of the aftermath, of, you know, because you can tell whatever story you want if you just show pictures of burned out buildings. But the grand jury convened and decided that there really wasn't a case to be made that the whites caused this.
Grand jury blames Negroes for inciting race riot. Whites clearly exonerated. The complete text of the grand jury's report follows. Tulsa, June 1921. To the Honorable Judge Valjean Fidison of the District Court, Tulsa County. We, the grand jury summoned by you to make an investigation of the cause of the recent riot and other violations of the law in Tulsa County, beg to submit to you the following report in addition to indictments and accusations which are already in your hands. We first desire to state that we have examined a great many witnesses in our effort to arrive at the facts. We have advertised that we desired the full information of every citizen who knew facts. We have heard one who requested to be heard in addition to the many who were summoned to appear. We have weighed the evidence impartially. We have sought to do justice to every individual and to carry out the instructions of the Honorable Court. We find that the recent race riot was the direct result of an effort on the part of a certain group of colored men who appeared at the courthouse on the night of May 31st, 1921, for the purpose of protecting the Dick Rowland, then and now in the custody of the sheriff of Tulsa County, for an alleged assault upon a young white woman. We have not been able to find any evidence either from white or colored citizens that any plan was made or attempted to take from the sheriff's custody any prisoner, the crowd assembled about the courthouse being purely spectators and curiosity seekers, resulting from rumors circulated about the city. There was no mob spirit among the whites, no talk of lynching, and no arms. The assembly was quiet until the arrival of armed Negroes, which precipitated and was the direct cause of the entire affair. While we find the presence of the armed Negroes was the direct cause of the riot, we further find that there existed indirect causes more vital to the public interest than the direct cause. Among those were agitation among the Negroes of social equality and the laxity of law enforcement on the part of the officers of the city and county. We find that certain propaganda and more or less agitation had been going on among the colored population for some time. This agitation resulted in the accumulation of firearms among the people and the storage of quantities of ammunition, all of which was accumulated in the minds of the Negro, which led them, as a people, to believe in equal rights, social equality, and their ability to demand the same. We are glad to exonerate the great majority of the colored people, who neither had knowledge of or part in either the agitation or the accumulation of arms or ammunition, and recognize the possibility of such a fact even in as public a place as a church, without the rank and file of the people having knowledge of the same.
So it turns out the black mob was itching for a race war, that a certain faction of the blacks had been stockpiling weapons, some of which were found in a church, and were looking for their opportunity to kick off a race war. And they got their opportunity, and they took it. and then they got their asses fucking whooped. And so now, forever, there will be a big memorial to these people in downtown Tulsa. You'll be told that whites massacred one day for no reason at all. I mean, I guess they got what they wanted, right? Took 100 years, but they finally succeeded. There's movies depicting the whites mindlessly, violently attacking blacks, peaceful blacks, for no reason. Burning down their shining city, Black Wall Street. Raping and pillaging as they go. When the reality was, there were blacks itching for a race war, preparing for a race war, spreading propaganda of a race war, agitating people. And when there were whites gathered outside the police station, many of which were just looky-loos, just curiosity. As I said, there's articles prior to this incident describing this exact behavior. A throng of white people outside the police station. When there's no one there to lynch, it's just a police station. After an incident like this, curiosity. And there's no TV to watch, you know. Hey, you want to go down to the police station and find out what's going on with those chicks that are getting raped? Yeah, why not? What else are you going to do? I'm not going to be playing Mario Kart. You're not going to be watching Netflix. So they did. They went down there. A bunch of white people are out there. And what the black agitators did is they went through their black community and said, them white boys are going to lynch Diamond Dick. We have to go down and protect Diamond Dick. Get your guns. And then they shot a white guy and it kicked it off. But forever, you'll be told that you caused this. You were the reason for this. And so if you want to understand the psychology of these people that apologize for their son or daughter getting into the way of the knife or gun of a immigrant or a black or whoever, this is why. They've been mind-fucked into believing that we eternally owe these people something. That we have just existed in a state of constant evil. And periodically, like a satanic volcano, we just erupt and all the demons, the white demons, come pouring out like lava. Consuming everything in its path. And this fits great with the World War II narrative. That's what they tell you about Hitler. I mean, it's literally the same story. One day, you know, jealous white people, you know, seeing what the Jews had, the wonderful, virtuous Jews in their neighborhoods, they were just like, "Oh, those fucking Jews. I'm jealous. Let's round them all up and stick them in gas chambers." That sounds reasonable. You see, that's why one of the reasons why they have to keep that lie alive. Because if you believe that lie, you believe this lie. If you believe that lie, that white people one day, for no reason at all, just rounded up a bunch of innocent, minding their own business people and started systematically gassing them to on a scale that the world had never seen before or since, Millions. Millions upon millions. If you can believe that, then why wouldn't you believe this? It makes everything else, all the other blood libels against white people, it makes it all very plausible all of a sudden. See, but if you stop believing in it, you start questioning other wild tales about your ancestors. You say to yourself, well, wait a second, if they were lying to us about this, maybe they were lying to us about a great many things. And this is one of those things. By the way, Diamond Dick, he was just a good boy. He's the gigantic Negro in the center there. Notice how he's taller than his adult teacher. It's like Michael Brown all over again. Gentle giant. So Diamond Dick was just this fucking monster who grabbed a 17-year-old white girl . I think this is the only photo that exists of her. This is the woman holding her child. This was many years later. Look how small she is compared to her. Either her husband there is a giant, or she's pretty small. And this fucking guy comes in and grabs her, and she screams. And all the dumb excuses. Well, he slipped and grabbed her. Yeah, okay. I think we have enough examples of black behavior happening right around the exact same time to know that that's probably not the case. And it doesn't matter even if that was, because that's not what the riot was about. The riot was about black militants who were stockpiling guns and decided to, the war with Whitey had begun. So anyway, that's the real story of Black Wall Street. So next time you hear some idiots talk about Black Wall Street, that's what really happened. Even though there's endless videos, a lot of, you know, which feature Jews on YouTube and everywhere else talking about how, oh yeah, the blacks were, they were just getting too successful. They were just becoming too civilized for the white people's liking. The white people are only happy when the blacks act like animals. Like a complete inversion of reality. Oh, look, blacks manage out of the entire history of blacks in America. They managed to have two blocks with businesses. That's Black Wall Street. Holy shit. Anyway. So I got some... I got some bad news. I've been holding off telling you guys this Because I was hoping I was wrong. But I think Churro has returned to the desert. He's been gone. It's been about almost 4 weeks. Longest he's ever been gone is about 2 weeks. And so when he first disappeared, I thought, well, it's spring. That's about when he disappeared last time. It was because he went on his little Tomcat sex tour. But it felt different. I was like, no, he was reliably around the house for like several days before. And usually when he's gone the next day for a couple of days, it's like, you're like, I kind of figured he'd be gone. I don't know why. But this time I was like, that's weird. He's gone. And I waited like a week and then like another week. And I was like, I don't know. And I went looking for him during those 2 weeks, in neighboring areas, places. There's a lady that feeds cats. It's like a mile or so away, but she's, close enough for cats to get to. I was like, well, maybe he's out there fucking cat, fucking the girl cats. And I asked her if she'd seen him and asked all the neighbors and I don't think he's coming back. So I am going to take down the Churro merch just because it feels weird, like here's a shirt with my missing cat on it. And I say missing because while I suspect it's probably not good, but there does exist the possibility that he was abducted by boomers, because there are seasonal boomers that live in RVs sort of in the area. And it's entirely possible, although I don't think likely, that one of them was like, oh, this is a super nice cat. Let's take him with us. Because this is around when a lot of boomers are exiting the area. But most likely, I don't know. Or he was abducted by aliens who knows. But I'm almost certain at this point he's not coming back. So, I don't know. I felt weird not telling you guys that. But I was also just like, I don't know. He could come back. But now it's like, no, he comes back now, it's like a miracle. And this whole time, I've left my front door open just in case he does come back. And I'm asleep, I'll hear him meowing, but he's not coming back. So, anyway, kind of sucks, but there it is. Now that I've told you guys, now he's officially gone. And that's the other reason I didn't want to tell you guys. Because I was like, well, if I tell him, that means he's gone for reals. But it is what it is. Anyway, on that light note, let's take a look at Hyper Chats. But yeah, he was a good cat. He was a good cat, really super friendly, which is why, like I said, I'm open to the possibility, at least in my head, maybe it's a cope, that someone took him. And I hope that's what happened. Because he was super friendly, but he was also very aware of like danger. So he wasn't like an idiot. He wasn't like a stupid dopey cat. But like he would start growling and looking into the desert, and I'd be like, what, what is it? And then eventually you'd see like a coyote or something like that. So he would sense these things way before I did. And he was afraid of snake-like objects, because he wasn't at first, but he started being afraid. At some point, he must have had a run-in with a snake, because it was just like one day. And actually, it was after he'd been gone for a few days. Anything that looked like a snake, like even a little bit, like a garden hose, or he was like super suspicious of. So you know, it could have been that. I don't know. But, I mean, he was fun. Look, he came out of the desert randomly, and he returned to the desert randomly, and he's, he was a good little furry, furry friend. So anyway, enough about that. Let's take a look at Hyperchats. I never understand what, if these are newest to oldest or oldest to newest. Okay, our Finnish friend with the incomprehensible name says, you missed my entropy chat from last Tuesday. The payment has gone through my bank's site as well. Well, I'm not sure what it was then. I don't think there's, I mean, I'm assuming I'll get it, like, in terms of the money, but, like, I don't know. I don't even know how to look at past ones. Let me see if there's an, let me look if there's a history. I don't want to break anything, but entropy still feels like it's, it, like, I, the interface is not great. Account? Let's see here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, I might find a way of finding this actually. Let's see. Okay, I don't see it there. Okay, I got something from the 16th. That says, the recent Negro incident shouldn't surprise anyone. Check out the Cannibal Warlords of Liberia. Funnily enough, from Vice, cannibal Negro who works as a pastor, and no one seems to mind that fact. Is that what you're talking about? That's the only one I've got from you within the time period you're talking. That was on the 16th. So I go before that. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Yeah, I don't know if that's the one you're talking about. But yeah, sorry I missed that. And I guess people can check that out. Simbi says, in the last stream, you said you hadn't yet found the link for the Buchanan Castle game mod. It is in the Doom section on the main page. Just click the Escape from Buchanan Castle image. Now would be a great time to download it. Check Bro has just finished a replacement map for E3L2. I don't know what E3L2 is. But I'll check out the site then. I'll tell you what, I'll check it out. Maybe I'll play it. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe it'll be fun, like chill out stream kind of stuff. We can play that. I was also going to, so I told you guys, or at least I put out on Twitter and on Telegram, that I found out there was an old electromechanical pinball machine called the Gay 90s. Now, it's the Gay 90s also refers to, people used to say the Gay 90s when referring to the 1890s, so it's not really about, you know, because it came out in 1971 or something, right? But I made a joke saying, like, oh, look, the Gay 90s, it was a warning to the boomers, and they didn't listen. Especially because the cabinet art, it looks super gay in 90s. It's even got, like, the 90s colors, like the pink and, you know, that the very CGA looking color palette. But maybe I downloaded it for Visual Pinball and played it a little bit. I used to have three EM pinball machines. I had one called Flicker, in fact, that had blackface on it. It had Al Jolson was on the playfield in blackface. So I downloaded that one too, and I downloaded the other ones I had. And, you know, the technology is way better now, like way better. When I looked at making like a virtual pinball machine years ago, it would have been probably like maybe even like two versions prior, like version 8. It just looked like ass. Like it looked like the physics were okay, but I just like the whole it just took away. It took there was no immersion because you were you know you just knew you were playing like a simulated pinball table. But with the new version 10. I don't know, 8 or whatever it is. It looks pretty fucking good. Like, it looks pretty good. Like, it looks really good. And they also have the new, like, force feedback. So if you build, like, I don't know, this is super nerdy and pointless. No one cares. But I've been geeking out on it a little bit lately. To take my mind off of the not as happy events lately. And the you can make virtual pinball machines that are actually pretty fucking... Not so bad. I mean, you know, for pinball. I actually thought about doing a pinball stream because I started researching. A lot of pinball companies are Jewish names, right? Like Gottlieb, Stern. I don't know if that's Jewish or just German. But Gottlieb's absolutely Jewish. And then I was looking at kind of like the, you know, how did pinball start? And how would I even make it into a stream? Like, who gives a fuck about pinball, right? As I'm sure many of you are thinking right now. And it was kind of interesting because at first I was like, well, how did this get started? I know there was like a gambling aspect to it because they banned pinball machines. Like, they took access to them. They were like throwing them in the fucking the Great Lakes, like outside Chicago. And then I looked into it further, and it was because the initial pinball machines, they were for gambling. Like the ones that Gottlieb made, it wasn't like a pinball machine like you would think now where there's like flippers and there's any kind of skill involved. It was called pinball because it was just pins hammered into a board inside this box with a glass top. And you had the plunger, like a normal pinball machine, and you would flick this ball up to the top, but then it would just, you know, plunk, plunk, plunk down and hit the different pins like, you know, like one of these things on, you know, the Price is Right kind of a thing, right? So it was gambling. And then it would just hit different points. And I thought to myself, why would that be fun at all? Like, why would it be fun to just, oh, look, I got 100 points. Like, so what? Like, there was no interaction from you. And then I found out, oh, actually, it's because the points would actually translate to either discount. Like, let's say you had a business, you could maybe have the pinball machine outside and like, oh, you got 100 points. That's $5 off your next purchase, you know, stuff. So they would do things where it was still kind of gambling. And in fact, it wasn't until a white guy came along and invented the flippers that it even became like a game where you had any kind of input on the outcome. And that's really what started pinball as like a game was some French guy who worked for Gottlieb. Anyway, I was just thinking about like that aspect of it and how it's still kind of silly. Like, it's silly that it's entertaining, that's captivating even for someone to stand behind a wooden box with a window on top and watch a metal ball like go bing, bing, bong, ba, bing, bong. Like, why is that fun? Because it's fun. I think it's fun. Why is it fun? Because when you think about it, it's really fucking stupid. It's stupid to just sit in front of a box, even if you have flippers, knocking a fucking metal ball around and flashing lights and stuff. And then I started thinking, well, it's got to be very similar to how they design slot machines, right? Like, there's got to be like some method to this, to where they've actually had to have studied, you know, exactly how to like, so slot machines, for example, they'll play sounds like kind of like the Pavlovian thing, right? Every time you win, it'll play a very specific sound over and over and over again. So you start associating that sound with winning. And then when you don't win, it'll play like almost the sound, and you think like, oh, I almost won because I almost heard the sound. Like it didn't play all the way, but that means I'm close. And it'll adjust how almost the sound you hear. And there's all these psychological tricks going on to make you keep feeding the slot machine. So I thought to myself, well, pinball machines are just, I mean, they're there to make money, right? They're there to just eat quarters. And I guess, well, nowadays it's to eat dollars. But that's what they existed for, is they existed to collect. I mean, after the initial run of pinball machines being like the gambling stuff. So the same thing, they have to set it up in such a way that it mind fucks you into thinking, oh, I almost won that time. I'll put another quarter in or whatever. But anyway, I thought that's going to require more research, but a little random. I know that has nothing to do with anything. But maybe in the future we'll have a pinball stream where I play the gay 90s pinball game. It's not that fun of a game. It's a lot of these EM, the old ones are pretty boring. Some of them are actually pretty clever, but they're not like the fancy pinball machines that people think about. Like the golden era of pinball was like in the 90s when they had like the Addams Family and Twilight Zone, and every time you went to the movie theater, they had like a pinball machine for that movie. I guess they still sort of do that, but it's just not quite the same anymore. Anyway, we got Volga German says, hi, Devin. Well, I appreciate that. And hi, right back at you. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, it was a sad day for us whites when the KKK Air Force got shut down. RIP Klan Air. Exactly. Yeah, it's too bad. Too bad the KKK Air Force is no longer operating. I'm going to get this attempted rapist off the screen. What is there? Is there anything good to look at? Okay, well, let me look and see if I got... Do I have a churro picture? I guess I can put up a churro picture. I don't have a churro picture. I've got churro video. I don't think I have a churro picture. Oh, I know where I can maybe find one. Let me see. Here's a good churro picture. Bring this one up. Come on, do what I want. There we go. All right. Where was I? Yeah. That is true. The KKK Air Force will rise again. Man of Low Moral Fiber again says, I wonder what the total cost is of government handouts for that 100-year-old Negro, or Negress, rather. I wonder how many great-grand niglets she's responsible for. Right. Well, she was 109. She wasn't even 100. She was 109, they said, which I don't believe, but maybe she was 109. I mean, that seems pretty high. Maybe, though. I mean, I don't know. Some guy says, I always thought the whole evil white guys lynched future astronaut for fun story was bullshit. I'm glad you're digging into these stories. You're single-handedly dismantling the anti-white narrative. Well, I appreciate that. Arch Stanton. Let's see if this will work. Nope. Some of these are broken now. I got to fix these. Oh, that's right. All right. Yeah, I got to fix that. I got to remember to fix that after the show. Arch Stanton says, just a few shekels for my fellow Jamalikos denier. All my life, I've heard endless blood libel against whites, and I'm mad at myself that I ever believed it. Well, don't be mad. They spent a lot of money on that endless blood libel. And then Arch Stanton again says, no idea why that why that last one went through twice, but that's cool. Double tip for you. Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, I was just wasn't sure if that was on my end or if you saw that too. Appreciate that. Bessemer. Now listen to those coyotes. That one's pretty close. Bessemer says, hi, Devin. Keep changing the world for the better. Thanks for all you do. R.I.P. Churro Buddy. May there be many little Churro Juniors running around. You know, and there probably are. Like, there probably are. In fact, I saw one that I highly suspected was a mini churro. I went somewhere pretty close enough for to where churro would have been able to go there, because cats actually have like a shockingly wide radius sometimes. Like they've put those tracking collars, and it's like anywhere from like 5 to 10 miles they'll go from the and sometimes further. And I was close enough to where that could have been where he'd gone. And Churro, because he liked pissing on things, had right before I left had pissed on the tire of my car. And when I got out of the car, a little miniature looking Churro was sniffing that tire. And all I could think of was like, is that your missing dad? Are you like, daddy, this smells like daddy. But then the little cat ran away real fast. But I suspect he was a virile cat. I suspect he spread his DNA. So there's probably little mini churros out there somewhere. At least I like to believe that. Man, that coyote's just going on and on. I hope the neighbor's dog kills it. Because if it doesn't, I might have to. The other thing that sucks about churro being gone is my yard is rotten with fucking bunnies now. He used to kill those little bastards, and I guess they found a way in, because last night, or around dusk, I went outside and there was like 4 of them in the yard. And I was like, what the fuck? And since Churro had been here, we were bunny free. Now I got to get the gun and start slaughtering the bunnies again and sealing off their, you know, I check the perimeter and look for, you know, wherever they're getting through at. All right. Then we got, oh no. I forgot to do the rumble thing the right way. Oh no, I'm gonna have to. Oh man. Okay, let me figure this out. Sorry guys, I forgot to make rumble work where I could read the things, and now I gotta go through the stupid menu here where it cuts off part of your chat. Under account overview, I forget where it goes. Yeah, here it is. There's no way to see the whole thing, guys. I'm sorry. This is this kind of sucks. Yeah, it's gonna cut off all your guys' chats on Rumble to where like it's just like the first part of a sentence. That's my bad. Hold on, let me go back and fix this so if there's any new ones, I'll see them in their entirety. Okay. All right. So sorry, guys, I'm not going to be able to see the whole thing. I got no curtain, just says, when I was 7 years old, ... Okay, well, I don't know what that was about. I apologize. And I'm doing these, I guess, backwards, because it's easier to do it that way. Negro Spritzer says, I despise those kind young gentlemen that lived within the borders of Black Wall Street. Gravy Bear, because all it says is I despise, and then some ... Gravy Bear, have you heard about the... That's literally what it says. Dot, dot, dot. That's all it says. No, I haven't. Rupert says, any non-white who lives in a... Dot, dot, dot. I guess you guys just have to be really consistent. Although, here we go. We got Stick sent me here. His entire chat was short and sweet.
When you're trying to save money, a good rule to follow is to... Take it from me, Jim Neighbors. It'll pay dividends. Focus!
It just says, keep up the good work. Well, look at that. See? See, nice and it all fit in there. I got to read the whole thing because it fit in the little box here that I have to work off of. Revolver 357N2 says, not for the stream, just a, and then that's it. Sorry, guys. I wish there was a way to fix that. If there is, I'm not aware of it. I'll tell you what, I'll try to find out if there is a way of seeing these in longer form, but I don't think there is. Let's see here. Gravy Bear says, I think you're one of the best, dot, dot, dot. Well, that could be anything. That could be anything. And I agree. I am one of the best. You fill in the blank. There you go. Appreciate that, Gravy Bear. Negro Spritzer again. He's a little more concise. Just goes right for it and says that he's not a fan of the residents of Black Wall Street or of Jewish Wall Street or Mexican Wall Street or Asian Wall Street, for that matter. He fit all that in somehow. D-Man 119 says, oh, and happy Easter, Devin. Well, I appreciate that. Like I said, I'm going backwards, so I'm assuming that you say something that I won't get the whole thing of. Decimal Threat says, here's to the heat. Well, that one fit in there, too. Look at that. We got the whole thing. The Shogun says, this one is for more burger. Well, look at that. That fit in there, too. There is, I'll have to say, there does seem to be a direct correlation between the smaller donations and the more words that don't fit. It seems like those who come with the big donos use fewer words that actually fit in this thing. So I don't feel as bad, you know, I don't know. Ghost Dog Man says, them prostrating bleeps always, dot, dot, dot. Well, all right. I think I get where you're coming from there. Based 1483 says, I met her when she barely got. I feel like there's more of a story there, but we're not going to be able to hear. Ghost Dog Man says, remember everyone, it's all. That's true. That is true. I'm gonna assume you mean all of them. I'm gonna finish your thought for you. Maybe that's what I should do. I'm gonna start finishing these. Based 1483 says Obama went to Occidental. Also, I'm gonna finish that. Also, I hate that school and the dumb bitch that I used to date that was from there. And fuck her. She's mind fucked now. I'm assuming something like that, right? Because isn't that what you were saying last time? It was a ex-girlfriend of yours went to Occidental. Wait, is this from the previous stream? Am I reading? So I don't even know now. Maybe I went too far. Yeah, I think I went too far because I went to the Happy Easter. All right, so that's what we got here. Let me go back to... All right, and then we have some full ones I can actually read that I start up the right thing. We got No Curtain says, when I was 7 years... Oh, we got the whole thing. When I was 7 years old, my cat went missing. A year later, I found his skeleton behind the barn. Yeah, I mean, I that's one that I don't want to find. I wonder if on one of my night hikes that I will be resuming. Honestly, I guess if there's a silver lining, night hikes became less attractive to me because I knew he would follow me out there and I didn't want him going out in the desert. And now I guess I don't have to worry about that. But I do wonder, like, that'll suck. I mean, I guess it won't suck because I'll be able to give him a proper burial. I'll give him a proper burial. If I'm out there and I find churro remains, I'll dig him a place to be. I don't know. Put him somewhere nice, maybe on the mountaintop out here. But yeah, I've had a lot of not so nice visions in my head about finding dead churro. Let's see here. Who's Joe? Says, hey, Devin, sorry I haven't been super chatting recently. I need a new job. God bless for all the quality work. Well, I appreciate that. No, not a problem. Not a big deal. All right. And I think that's it. So let's go ahead and shut her down. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys being here with me this evening. And there's a possibility I can't do Saturday. Possibility. But probably we'll be here Saturday. And I'll let you guys know as soon as I know. So, in the meantime, hope you guys all have a wonderful rest of your week. Until we meet again for Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Stagg.
Okay, early to bed, early to rise makes a woman healthy, wealthy, and wise. That's why you're wiser than me. It's Stephen.
Hi, I'm Maurice. I'm an executive by day and a wild man by night.
Hi, my name's Monroe. You've probably already noticed that I have incredibly blue eyes.
Hi, my name is Phil. Most of my friends call me Big Phil.
Okay, I like to talk to people deep into the night.
I play guitar.
I'm Eitan.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Hi, my name's Mike, and if you're sitting there watching this tape smoking your cigarette, well, hit the fast-forward button, because I don't smoke and I don't like people who do smoke.
I'm not afraid to get sand on my tuxedo if you're not afraid to let the wind mess your hair up a little bit when I take the top down.
Perhaps even a nice bath with some champagne and candles.
Hi, Mom.
I do fashion photography, and I do consider myself a refined valley dude.
Okay, I'm looking for a trendy girl with a simple smile. Wait, it says here, oh, excuse me.
I don't know, what I'm not looking for is some big overgrown monster that's always thinking about food and...
Whoso binds to himself a joy, doth its winged life destroy.
I like to do a lot of sailing. I like to outdoor activities. I like climbing. I like travel.
I took a sponge ball and was pulling him out of a little girl's ear.
Vivacious, foxy.
I'm looking for the goddess. Are you the goddess? Who is the goddess? The goddess is the woman, is a woman, is any woman, is all women.
A figure that is sexy, slim, tight, excellent legs.
I'm a 25-year subscriber to both Playboy and the New Yorker magazine.
At night, I operate a damsel in distress hotline. I guess you'd call me a knight.
One of my favorite foods is pizza. And just sugar and spice and all those things that are nice.
I like to be with people who are as fun and adventuresome as well.
Is into having fun.
Have fun.
I enjoy having fun, yes.
Looking for somebody who likes to have a lot of fun.
I'm looking for someone to have fun with.
Love to have a good time.
Able to have fun.
Fun and laughter.
And anything that's fun, I like to have fun.
And have a lot of fun.
Are you looking for me?
No fatties.
I want it all.
No hamsters.
I steal watches.
No dopers, no smokers, no alcoholics.
We don't like to write checks.
No Donna Juanitas.
We don't like to take out the garbage.
No posers.
What I'm doing right now is making a movie about World War II.
No crazies.
Santa Monica and my front porch swing.
I'm currently involved in cleaning up toxic waste.
I'm not having fun doing this.
Do you like cats?
Domestic violence.
That I like to wear bright socks, and I'm an avid Cleveland Browns fan.
sexual abuse.
Life is a playground, and I want somebody to play with.
All sorts of alcoholics and addicts and stuff.
Because I really have a zany sense of humor.
We probably don't like to clean the house.
My mother still writes to me regularly.
Because I average about 4 hours a night's sleep.
I will cry at a commercial.
I'm interested in most phases of data processing.
Fire-breathing dragons.
Type A, I'm not. Comfortable, caring, and serious about a relationship, I am.
I'm really looking for somebody I can feel special about, and I don't encounter people like that very often, and I'm hoping you're one of them.
Are you that woman? Please give me a call.
And you know that a journey always begins with the first step. And I hope that if you like what I'm trying to say, or you'd like to know more about me, to please write.